Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
As I was watching the funeral service of Justice Scalia at the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C., I literally began to weep for our country, because now that he is no longer on the U.S. Supreme Court, critical decisions will ultimately go possibly the other way, depending upon who takes his place. We're going to be talking about Justice Scalia, the vacancy on the Supreme Court, and the future ahead. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me is Matt Barber, the founder of barbedwire.com. Matt, it was a somber moment to watch the funeral service of Justice Scalia, to realize that we've come to a point where there is a huge vacancy on the United States Supreme Court. I know it shocked everyone of his death, but in terms of the impact that it will have, it will be amazing in terms of not only cases that are currently before the United States Supreme Court, but cases that will come before the United States Supreme Court. We'll talk about that on another occasion, but his loss at the U.S. Supreme Court is incredibly important. To fill it will be incredibly important, I believe, and we'll unpack this a little bit later in this program, that we need to do three things. Number one, we need to make sure that the Senate does not confirm any nominee by President Barack Obama. Number two, we need to make sure that the U.S. Senate does not go into recess. We'll talk a little bit about that later. And number three, we need to make sure that we elect the right president for the White House, who in 2017 will nominate the right person to replace Justice Scalia.
Well, people always say this is the most important election ever. This is, you know, this is such an important issue. Literally, the fate of the United States for generations, for at least a generation, lies in the balance here. And don't think that the so-called progressives and President Obama and other people don't recognize that. The court is already tilted in favor of a kind of a living, breathing view of the Constitution with the five liberals on the court. This essentially creates a further misbalance with five liberals and three originalists on the court who actually value their calling to interpret the Constitution. And so this is a critical a battle that is going to occur here between Republicans and in the Senate, President Obama. They simply cannot give in and allow him to appoint another radical judicial activist to this high court. And Matt, you mentioned the service. What a beautiful service. And I was choked up multiple times, as were you throughout. The Reverend Father Paul Scalia, the son of Justice Scalia, gave a moving, a stirring homily, and just really, really a beautiful service that honored the life and the incredible contribution to the United States of a towering jurist.
Yes, you know, Justice Scalia, you know, oftentimes is called the father of originalism. He's not the father of originalism. He's certainly the justice on the Supreme Court in modern times that ultimately reminded people of what has been common knowledge, and that is you need to go back to the original intent of the Constitution in the text itself. Sometimes it's called originalism. Sometimes it might be referred to as textualism. Sometimes they get conflated. Sometimes they're different. But the idea is go back to the original words of the Constitution and the original understanding of what the founders meant that constitutional principle to be. You mentioned that there's three originalists. Well, that would have included Justice Scalia. I don't think that there's three remaining originalists on the bench. I think of those that are remaining, the closest one to originalism would be Justice Clarence Thomas. He's one who looks at the history and the intent of the Constitution. I think the next one might be Justice Samuel Alito, although he's not necessarily an originalist. He's somebody who would certainly be very respectful of the original understanding of the Constitution. And Chief Justice John Roberts, you know, you can't really call him an originalist, certainly across the board, when he comes out with the Obamacare decision, as he did when he upheld the Obamacare decision. He frankly, literally, unquestionably rewrote the Obamacare legislation. The rest of the justices up there, including Justice Kennedy, are far from being originalist. They basically will ultimately think of the Constitution as a living, breathing document. And sometimes Kennedy may be more in line with the intent of the Constitution, but other times he's so far off the beaten path that it has no resemblance to the Constitution, such as in the decision with regards to marriage. So without Scalia there, it is a huge void, and it will ultimately mean several things. We've got to make sure, because it's non-negotiable, we can't allow the Senate to have weak knees and buckle. We can't allow them to blink. Number one, we have to make sure that they do not confirm any nominee. Now, President Obama has the right under the Constitution to make a nomination. He has that right to make a nomination, and he will do so. But the Senate also has the right to not confirm that nomination. And whether they will hold that right up, we don't know. We get conflicting messages from time to time. We have good messages that they say they will not nominate, or they will not confirm anyone that Obama nominates. They will wait for the next president to do that. We need to make sure that they are true to that word, and we need to make sure that they do not buckle under pressure. The second thing that we need to do is convince the Senate not to go into recess. Why? Because they have two possible times to go into recess. The time in August where they go into their summer recess before the election, and the time after the election where they go into a recess around Christmas at the end of the year up through the time of January 3 or January, mid-January. They do not have to go into recess. The Senate, unlike the House, is a body of continuing existence. In other words, it can be in session 365 days a year. On January the 3rd of 2017, the Senate that has just completed its term will expire, and the new Senate will immediately come into existence, including those new individuals that have been elected to those Senate seats. They do not have to have recess because they can immediately go from the older Senate, the previous Senate, into the new Senate. And the reason why they can't do a recess is because if they do, President Obama will use that recess to appoint someone, and he will not need a vote if they're in recess. He will put them there, and they will be there for a year until that term expires, at which time they will have to come up for hearings and a vote. But in the meantime, they could do a lot of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matt, you hear those on the left and the media, and they have convenient lapses of memory here, many of them. The Constitution says that the Senate is to provide advice and consent relative to judicial nominations, including a Supreme Court nomination, advice and consent. So they don't have to approve. They can do an up or down vote if they want to. They don't even have to bring a vote to the floor. They don't even have to move a vote out of committee. And they can filibuster a vote if a vote does make it out of committee and onto the floor of the Senate. And President Obama himself took part in a filibuster of one of George W. Bush's Supreme Court nominees, Justice Samuel Alito. And so, you know, he's kind of between a rock and a hard place now. You know, he's being a bit hypocritical to say that the Supreme, or rather the Senate, is not engaging in its constitutional mandate if it does not vote or filibusters or does not allow a vote on one of his radical nominees, because he himself was, to use their definition, an obstructionist in the past.
Well, this is very critical. The third thing, as I mentioned before, we have to make sure that we vote for the right person and put the right person in office as the President of the United States in 2017. Obviously, that election will be this coming November. Go to Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org, and ask for the Patriots Handbook series on political activity of pastors and churches. We need to get our churches and our pastors engaged in advancing and promoting and putting to practice our Judeo-Christian values. As we believe on Sunday, we must vote on Tuesday and every other time that we have that opportunity to vote. Our Judeo-Christian values cannot be bifurcated. They're not something that we just simply bring out of the closet once in a while. They should permeate everything that we do, our life, our teaching, our thinking, what we hear, what we say. They're not just confined to the four walls of the church. They also must transform the culture. So ask for the Little Patriots Handbook series, and one of those booklets is on pastors and political activity. We need to get engaged in this political process. Go to Liberty Counsel's website for more information. You can also make an online credit card contribution right there at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org. Remember Liberty Counsel in your prayers and your financial support. Remember America as we move forward in these next critical months as we continue to advance our Judeo-Christian values. All of this is hanging in the balance.
You have been listening to Faith and Freedom with Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Working together, we can make a difference. Get informed and stay involved. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org. That's lc.org. And tune in next time right here for Faith and Freedom.